listeners and viewers, this is Ron Stefanski. Welcome to another episode of the podcast Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the passionate and purpose-driven, those innate do-gooders out there who are helping us to understand both the promises and the challenges and the opportunities inherent in a world that has gone wired. And what I mean by that is 5G wired, workforce augmented, technology interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, pandemic interrupted, world of work and learning. And nowhere has disruption occurred on a more massive scale than in the world of higher education. And so we're going to talk about that in terms of the trends that are shaping both the world of higher education and the world of online education and where that's going and how those two connect, because so many are out there trying to figure it out and have landed on some pretty existential questions. What do I want to learn? How do I want to keep learning to keep up? How do I want to take advantage of the opportunities in a 5G wired world where AI is dominating businesses and enterprises across industries? All those questions each of us have in our life and in our work. And we've got two great guests today to help us sort through some of the chaos and disruption in higher ed. I'm joined today by Dr. Joseph Orgel, who is the Vice Provost at Illinois Institute of Technology. Welcome to the show, Joseph. It is great to have you. And also joining us today is Kelly Crabb, the Senior Vice President of Partnerships for a new educational venture, Honor Education, which, in full transparency, I'm getting the opportunity and the privilege of working with. So, Kelly, welcome to the show. It's great always to talk with you and have you here on
the show. Thanks, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Joe, I'm going to kick this off by getting right into it. You've come into academia from a very interesting and inquiry-based life where you really asked some pretty stunningly deep questions to figure things out in the world, but also for yourself, and ultimately have landed in an academic position. But tell us a little bit about your background and how you got here, because for so many of us, it's never a straight line, and yours is a very, very fascinating one. So why don't you kick off there?
That's so kind of you. Thank you. I had the privilege to be able to solve some very difficult scientific problems, and I like to say I did them because I was ignorant that they were supposed to be impossible, and I was too stubborn to quit. But part of my pathway into higher education, you wouldn't have predicted it from my early career in education. I was a non-learner right up until I was non-learner is really not right. Let me rephrase that. A non-reader and a different learner, I was defined as having a specific learning difficulty without the specific learning difficulty ever being properly defined. So simply different, this is now called neurodivergent. And the neurodivergence is on more than one particular spectrum. I developed a series of approaches to help me learn how to interact with the rest of the world and with other people. And it was during the course of my line of inquiry, whilst I was doing other things. So these other things have been, as a young teenager, I got the opportunity to be an intern at what we call in the United States Institutional Organizational Psychology, and in the United Kingdom, occupational psychology. I worked with one of those firms, and I got access to the cabinet office. It's like the state office in the United States, and private vendors. I'm not sure if their confidentiality agreements still in extent or not, but big name vendors at a very early age, and learned some significant things about workplace satisfaction, how things are done and how they're not done. Then worked in psychiatric care, and in particular, working with individuals with incredibly challenging behavior. And by that, I do mean physical as well as in character as well. These things set me up really well to be a student of human behavior and a student learning and how to build teams well. And I applied that in private practice as a consultant. I've been a consultant for team construction and for what's the word that we like to use? Begins with an R, restructuring. I've done my share, maybe more than my fair share of that. And I've worked in intellectual property definition. I've been hired by some companies to help them learn about what it is that their intellectual property actually is and what it does, which is a lot of fun because it just means that I have to dive in and figure it out from first principles. And realizing that initially my learning quote unquote disability actually turns out to be my superpower has been quite an interesting journey, to say the least. And then figuring out that I could help other people, even people who would define themselves as neurotypical, which is most people, who knows what it is today. But learning that I can help others to accelerate their speed, to improve their quality of life, their retention of facts. We've developed a system under my tutelage at Illinois Institute of Technology that has significant tangible gains, and we're in the process of implementing that at considerable scale. So that's a little bit of my introduction into where I'm at today. I'm looking forward to getting more into this as our conversation evolves.
Well, thank you, Joseph, for that origin story, because it connects very closely with Kelly and tracks with her work, because she's been at the heart and soul of online education during her career. And I think it's safe to say, Kelly, that you've seen it all. And you've seen a lot of things going on higher ed through the lens of someone who's operating within the online space. And that's become a very integral part and parcel of the offerings in higher education. So let's hear from you, your origin story, because I think it'll become very apparent why you're tapping into Joseph to take the work that you're doing completely next level, which is the theme of Disrupt Ed this year. Everything we're going to talk about is next level. And I think what you guys are plotting is certainly on a scale being next level. So Kelly, jump in.
Happy here to share. So Ron, I was a first generation college student, someone who quickly understood, having two working class parents, that there were haves and have-nots when it came to education, and a really clear connection for me to social mobility. And in discovering that, it really helped form my why for education. And almost all of the work that I've done, I had the privilege to do over the last, 20 or so years in partnership with universities and organizations globally, has been focused on democratizing education in some ways, making it more accessible and available to individuals irrespective of background, really focusing on, as you mentioned, next level solutions at each stage of the innovation journey, which has been fascinating over the last, 20 years or so, to see how things have evolved and be, able to play some small role in that. But, more so, the ways in which, we're seeing online education evolve today continue to sort of build on the great work that people have, done collectively up to this point. We're seeing themes such as, back when I started working with online education, it was like, what is this online education? Is this real learning? What is happening, right? We're just sort of taking everything that was in the classroom and trying to put it in an online delivery mode. Whereas post-pandemic, there's really this expectation that we're seeing that it's not just about delivering content or making learning accessible, but it's really about leveraging technologies in ways that can foster true connection and community. We're seeing a demand for personalized learning in ways that also don't mean disconnected from other individuals, right? So while, individuals who are engaging in online learning may need individualized support or resources, we still want to foster that connection with instructors and peers and within the content itself. And so it's an exciting time because we're, you know, moving in a direction that is next gen learning, you know, that really puts human connection at the center of the learning. And, you know, right now with AI being all the rage and everyone is talking about all the different AI solutions, we have an opportunity to leverage technology to accelerate that human connection. And so that's really what I'm excited about Dr. Orgel's work as well.
Right. And I think it's interesting and serendipitous that we're able to bring the two of you together, because as you're thinking about transforming this online experience into something that's more engaging, and on the one hand, you know, a more personalized path, but on the other hand, a more collective experience where people recognize the importance of learning from each other and learning from the students in the class as well as from the instructor. And then you have this brilliant brainiac scientist here next to us, Joseph, who's using the approach of someone who's neurodivergent to say, hey, how do we help people? How do I use this superpower to kind of help people come into this world in a different way and in a way that works for them? And I think that's, you know, I think as we take value judgments away from labels like disabilities or from, you know, the word autism or the word neurodivergent, I think when we take those labels and they take with them the judgment that occupies them previously, and it frees us up to recognize, as I do with you, Joseph, that your individual nature of being someone that's neurodivergent has actually never been a disability. It's fueled this extraordinary intellectual curiosity and sense of inquiry that's propelled a whole lot of things in your work in academia and in the corporate world as well. Is that a fair statement?
I think that is a fair statement. It sounds like something I said about myself not long ago.
Well, so, yeah. So, Kelly, I'd like you to jump in here and talk about, you know, how you and Joseph have been carrying this conversation forward to be transformative. It almost seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seems like the work Honor's doing is, if I were to put it into a sentence, it's taking AI to leapfrog, not leverage, but leapfrog current technologies. We have a lot of kludgy, large learning systems out there that aren't serving the needs of a lot of the instructional community. They don't feel like they can do what they want to do in the class, and it doesn't conform to their approach. It's not easy to use. In some cases, it's over-engineered. In other cases, it's you know, got so many band-aids holding it together that it doesn't really accomplish what we want. So it seems to me that what you're involved in with Joseph and others is how to use AI to kind of strip all that stuff out and to start new and to create something entirely next gen. Is that an overly ambitious description of it, or is that aspirational on your part?
No, I think we're definitely down that path. And you know, I think that there's a lot of different fantastic technologies out there and solutions out there that have served for the various stages of online learning. And, you know, you're touching on a point that is some of the legacy systems. It's not necessarily knocking any of those systems, but for those that were maybe created 10 or 15 years ago, when the mission was, let's just get this online learning into, you know, the technology so we can deliver it online. On the heels of that, you start to think of all the other needs that maybe have been outsourced. And a lot of those needs maybe have been around engagement and how do we better facilitate that? And so the result is add-on technologies and, you know, a lot of different tools that are trying to make the experience whole. And the approach that we're trying to take at Honor is the approach that we are taking at Honor is to be a next gen LMS. So while many systems are doing a great job on the management and administrative part of things, we really want to be focused on unlocking a better learning experience through collective engagement. And I think some of that definitely segues, Joseph, you know, that sort of spirit segues into a lot of the work that you're doing in partnership with you know, Chicago Public Schools and others. And I'd love to, you know, hear a little bit more about that work. And certainly I'm happy to, you know, share some color on the ways in which technology may, you know, scale similar type projects.
Joseph, tell us about the work at Chicago Public. As we talked off camera, and what you're attempting is extremely bold and innovative in next gen. So tell us more about how the work is being developed and how it's being implemented across a massive school system.
Thank you. It is extraordinary. And I suppose if I got hung up on how big it sounds, it might not have ever happened. But we signed the agreement and we were officially launched. Announcements and joint press conference went out on March 20th and called Runway 606. We are without doubt innovative and next generation, but I also like the expression, our future is in our past. If we think about higher education and the derivatives from that, which is the schools that lead to higher education for the most part, have as a legacy in their design and their organization to serve people who are well-resourced. And having come, as Kelly shared, of a similar kind of not so well-resourced background of going to school and possessing one sweater and one pair of trousers or pair of pants, if you prefer, and not knowing when my next meal is going to be, in addition to having the learning struggles in the environment that was not well suited to someone like me. And you have a number of people who have made it through the education system through quote unquote heroic effort. They've been helped by someone, they've been mentored by someone, but they have made an enormous effort. That's an amazing series of stories of many worthy people. It's not so great for us as a culture to make it so inaccessible by accident for the most part. And there are ways to have everything, to have more accessibility, more effectiveness, and more efficiency. So, you know, whilst education, as we're describing it, was designed for people who had high resources going back into the past, artesian mentorship was not that way. Right? They were talking about many generations of skills transfer in our civilization that occurred through a skilled craftsperson instructing another. And again, you can make a very legitimate argument that that's just a different level of well-resourced. But please take me at my word at this moment. It's a metaphor. I'm trying to make a point. And so we've designed our approach at Illinois Institute of Technology on a durable skills transfer system and meeting people at where they are from day one. So I like to think if somebody has been admitted to Illinois Tech, they're extraordinary. There's something about them that is extraordinary, and somebody has seen that. Whether or not they do well is a different but related story, and it's not necessarily tied to their potential. So how about if rather than simply saying, look to the left and look to the right, next year half of you won't be here, how about we take a much kinder approach that still maintains vigor and standard, but instead of the gatekeepers simply keeping guard of the standard, the gatekeepers are like concierge assistants in addition to being the gatekeepers. And how if they how about them having a whole bunch of trainee concierge trainers and assistants and helpers? And you've got the basis of a train the trainer model, which is what we've stood up. So in the last 4 years at Illinois Tech, it sounds lovely in post hoc analysis, but a lot of it was driven by necessity at the time, having significant operational resource challenges, not enough money to do the job. And I'm looking around the university and thinking, we don't have an organized student success or academic student success program. What's the best resource I have? It's the people. It's the students themselves. And it's the students.
Yes, absolutely. So
I thought, how about generating a system and taking my experience across industries and with interpersonal skills and with problem solving, which I've been told is par excellence, problem solving in a very philosophically vigorous fashion, but also being dynamic and creative. How about encapsulating that in the way that I've been mentoring people one-to-one for decades and making that into a system at scale and embedding it into Illinois Tech? And 4 years later, we have small groups of instruction of about 6 or 7 students. We're now in this formalized class. We have 160 students a semester in this class, and it's growing. It's getting bigger. We have about 3,000 unique student clients per semester coming through in the support of the system. Our academic resource center is, if you just take out the one faculty director, is 100% student run. And that's by not just setting
up. Amazing.
Thank you. I feel quite pleased with it.
No, I think that's amazing. And I think it is changing the model. And just to interrupt here for a second.
Please do.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of very smart people, a lot of very smart educators are looking at the system of instruction that we have throughout K-12 and saying it's broken. And it some is. Are getting very specific in their prognostications and their diagnosis of what it is. And a lot of it always sums to the same thing. We built an education system for a mass production world in the industrial age, and we haven't broken it down to conform to the norms and standards and realities of a post-industrial world. And so what you're talking about is really experimenting with actually implementing something to fix that broken system at its core. In other words, as we've discovered, this industrial model, one size fits all, doesn't work. That's why we have 36 million people out there who have not completed a high school diploma in adulthood. That's why we have 40 million people who started college and haven't finished it. Obviously, those systems are operating as gatekeepers and weeding people out, rather than accommodating different learning styles, different learning personalities, to get them into a learning modality that works and takes them forward. So that's a pretty aspirational goal you have, Joseph. And so I want you to explore, you know, share with us more how you see technology helping that and how you see it potentially throwing a wrench into it.
A train, wrench, anything that you want. We act surprised when unaccounted for things interrupt our plans, when the truth is that life is one surprise after another. And integrating those surprises and the lessons learned into the next stage is part of growing wise and being strong. Right. So in integrating the technology, let me finish by saying that one of the things that we've instilled is taking the wisdom of learning how to learn and having a clear approach of learning how to learn. And it is based on a profound emotional intelligence that leads to a profound self-awareness and strong metacognition, which leads to academic and professional achievements. Having that in place establishes a culture, and a culture of personal empowerment and empowerment and desire to empower others. And culture is key. So that's part of our preprint that we've talked about and probably should mention at some point, not now, but our preprint encapsulating this is part of why the system works. And the role of technology in it, it is easy to try and embed knowledge and skill into a tool and then walk away and let the tool take care of things. That's unwise. The tool should augment you. So as an analogy, when we as a species discovered that the slingshot really got a lot more bang for buck than throwing stones and rocks, that was great, but we needed to never lose our ability to shape the stones. You know, in the first place. So the tools and AI language and large language models and any version, general or generative AI, has the potential to be a really good tool and assistant. Maybe It will be a nucleator for learning at some point in the future. Not there yet. So when we learn how to mesh the augmentation and the magnification of the effectiveness of a mentor and an instructor, and to be able to facilitate the feedback of the learner back and forth, two-way, then we've generated a powerful and facilitative tool. If we don't do that, we've made at best a distraction.
Yes. On that note, what I want to do is take a quick break. We're going to come back. We have a lot more questions for Joseph and Kelly, and we're going to move that into episode 2. So if you've been listening, you've been hearing from Dr. Joseph Orgo at the Illinois Institute of Technology and the Vice Provost, and Kelly Crabb, Senior Vice President of Honor Education. And I have a lot more questions about how they're using AI to shape the future of learning. And I also want to hear a lot more in our second episode about durable skills in that equation. So stay tuned and join us on episode 2.